everyone, and welcome to EduQuest. My name is Kirsten Winkler. I'm the founder of EduQuest, and as every week we are on the search for better education. Well, who better to invite than Farboud Nivi, founder of Grokket, let's talk a little bit how he sees the education space evolve and all the exciting things that are going on at the moment. So Farb, very happy that you accepted my invite and to have you on, finally, I have to say.
Very happy to be here, thank you for having me.
All right, so I already said you founded Grokket in 2006. You're also very involved, we can say, with Startup Weekend EDU. And now you don't want to say you moved on, but you are now doing Learnist. So a lot of things, and maybe that we are all on the same page. Maybe you can take us through a little bit this evolution, starting with Grokket. What was great back then, and what did you see as an opportunity or a chance coming from a teaching background, and sort of how it has evolved into what you want to do with Learnist now?
Great, thanks, I'd love to. Before I started Grokket, I was an educator for about 10 years, and the chief instructional design in my classroom that I tried to implement and implemented was social learning. So a lot of students learning from each other and the teacher facilitating that. So it's not quite the teacher sitting in the corner doing nothing. In fact, the teacher is fully engaged, you know, from beginning to end. And the students, more importantly, are fully engaged from beginning to end of class. So you know, there was always some lecture component of the class, but I tried to get that to be as minimal as possible and have the students in an organized and structured way interact and engage with each other to push their own understanding of things. And so, you know, a few years ago, sorry, go ahead. No question? I thought you had a question.
Not yet.
Okay. So then a few years ago, you know, as everything social was happening online, and the Facebooks and the MySpaces and all those things, it seemed like one social thing that wasn't really happening online was social learning. It's certainly happening. I mean, the internet is social learning as much as it can possibly get. It just wasn't, you know, formalized too much. I think one of the great examples in human history of social learning is Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Wikipedia was part of the first big things that hit the internet, you know, 15 years ago as the internet was coming to life. Before 15 years ago, you know, a little bit more than that, nothing we knew was online. And then the online world appeared. And then very quickly, people said, let's get everything we know online and share it directly with each other. So for example, Wikipedia is born. And someone on the other side of the planet can type something in Wikipedia and hit the submit button, and 1 second later, I'm learning directly from that person 10,000 miles away. So throughout human history, technology has unleashed social learning, first in the form of just writing itself, then, you know, much later, things like the printing press, and then the internet. These technologies make it easier for people to share knowledge directly with each other. Like I said, 15 years ago, nothing we knew was online. And when Wikipedia came around, you know, you remember like I did, if you wanted to load a 200 kilobyte image on your screen, you sat there and watched it load in one line at a time.
Absolutely.
Half minute, right? So when Wikipedia started, you know, there's two big things that happened since Wikipedia's early days. One, technology and bandwidth have rapidly changed. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a HD video was not an option for Wikipedia. But even if HD videos, the technology and the bandwidth existed 15 years ago, there was nothing online in HD video. There was nothing to learn. So Wikipedia also didn't have the option of sort of looking to what already exists online to help sort of start collaboratively generating this sort of these knowledge pools. So today, though, We're in a world where basically everything you want to learn is online. It's probably an HD video, it's probably free, and it's probably taught by the number one person in the world that knows that subject. That's a pretty massive coup in 15 years of the sort of powers that be in the world of human knowledge management. Who controls how that knowledge is disseminated and shared and distributed. So now you can go to Udacity or to YouTube and take a course on a lean startup from Steve Blank, one of the preeminent scholars in the world on this topic, and it's free. So Learnist came about because, Learnist is not quite a year old now. We launched it in June of last year, but sort of the year prior to that and the year leading up to that, I was thinking constantly on this issue of, like, everything we know is online. What to do with this information? And then additionally, I hear a lot of startup ideas in the tech space from folks, and I was just, despite the fact that everything we know is online, HD video taught by the best person in the world for free, I was constantly getting pitched these ideas for a website where teachers can upload video of themselves teaching a subject matter, and that we'd find the best one and float that up to the top. And it's like there was this disconnect between, and it's because this whole everything we know is online happens so quickly that people still are trying to think that we need to do that. And of course we do. Not every single thing we know is online. As we learn more things, granted those things get put online first now, right? As we learn new things, maybe one day they become printed on paper somewhere. But this is really remarkable. Even 5 years ago, you couldn't say everything we know is online in HD video because there was barely HD video 5 years ago. Khan, for example, Khan Academy, I think is part of an incredible wave of people putting everything we know online in HD video. And so, sitting with this, problem over and over again, what to do? What do we do with the fact that everything we know is online? At some point, after sort of looking at how Facebook works, how Twitter works, looking very deeply at Udemy, looking very deeply at Udacity and Coursera and all these models, and then sort of like getting this, Pinterest was a little bit of an aha moment from the perspective that what Pinterest did for me was kind of provide me a hook on the user experience, because, like I said, the easy part had to be there. I think part of the issue with some of these existing sort of online LMSs and content creators and course creators, easy is not the word you would apply to them. Most of the time, it's like, oh, you want to teach a course on this subject? Well, go record 100 hours of video and spend 500 hours recording it and editing it. And then, like, 12 weeks later, your course is up. So we're not going to get everyone to share what they know if that's how they have to do it. So when I saw Pinterest sort of, like, do this thing where they're like, oh, we can curate the web and grab a little image and just make it really easy for someone to just grab a URL and drive that all the way to a complete item on the web. Obviously, Learnist is quite different. And one of the things that we do very differently than Pinterest, yet sort of still sort of inspired by this one URL-only action that the person has to take, is we have these special learning types on Learnist. There's about 23 of them right now. Things like YouTube videos, everything from show me's to SoundClouds, Wikipedia articles, live view streams, you name it. We want to make it super easy for people to mash up the web, not just images on the web, not just text on the web, but technology and content, right? And so if you take a URL from SoundCloud or Wikipedia or YouTube or Ustream or any of these things, that's all you have to do as a user. We take it, we sort of intelligently look at that page and it's like, oh, it's a Ustream page, let's handle it this way, and we'll embed the Ustream video right there. It's on the web, it's on your iPhone, it's on the iPad, and literally the user copied and pasted one URL. So that was sort of the genesis of Learnist, and we sort of prototyped it internally. And one of the ways I tested it was just ask, if I knew, to share a handful of web URLs to teach a certain subject. And I emailed a bunch of people. And I was sort of expecting people to kind of like, you know, a handful of people would get back to me the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And in like 30 minutes, you know, 25, 30 out of the 50 people I emailed replied to me at the top and like the half a dozen web URLs they would use to teach it. So I was like, wow, if that's all it takes, then you can make it really easy for people to share what they know. And so, you know, long story short, then we just kept working on it, and things, one thing sort of came after another, and, you know, we're cranking along with the beta out on the web in June, and a couple of iOS apps out in September, and
mm-hmm.
just working away on it. Sorry for an extremely long-winded, nonstop answer.
No, it was an extremely fascinating one to see how this thought process was happened, and I would, supposedly, having had a look at your work and also what you did with Grokket, in some aspect, it has certainly helped, as well as I found it quite fascinating that throughout the history of Grokket, you took the time and also concentrated on little side projects. Sometimes it was a, let's say, innovative business model, what nobody else did, that you, said, okay, we don't charge for it the way everybody else, but we try to do it exactly the other way around, actually.
Yeah.
Or I remember that you took YouTube videos and you built something around the comments, and that
That's
teachers
right.
could then interact and yeah. So was that actually through experimenting with different features, having constantly thinking, you were speaking about HD and putting all the knowledge on the internet, has it helped and sort of learners evolved? You found I need to do something new with learners, and don't want to say that Grokket is finished, but it is not something we would simply modify Grokket into, or sort of spin it out a little bit, but still yeah. have it under the Grokket brand, or what? Were your feelings about that?
Sure, great. So Grokket, you know, the test prep stuff, the collaborative group, you know, students teaching each other to prep for tests, still runs. It's still generating revenue, and it kind of runs on its own. There's very little sort of development bandwidth applied to it anymore, just to kind of make sure it stays up and running.
So you would basically say that's mature as it is now, and you're ready, and you felt you want to move into your next thing.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the interesting thing is Learnist wasn't possible before Grokket started.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Hmm.
So and to your point, instead of sort of like just iterating on Grokket and sort of trying to accommodate the current state of the world and the current state of problems in sort of education and content, media, and these pieces, you know, like I said, we prototype a lot here, and most of the prototypes never see the light of day. And Grokket Answers, which was something that we did where basically you can timestamp Q&A inside of videos, was one of those things that made it out the door, quite frankly. And there were many more that never quite saw the light of day, like I said. And then Learnist was the same thing. It was a 24-hour-long prototype that me and one of my developers did that is actually still existing at some URL on the web that I won't share with anybody, but you know, it's like we took a stab at just sort of throwing it together, and we showed it to a few people, and then we spent a little bit more time on it. And I think it's one of those things that just for most people was like obvious, you know, and it came to a point where it's like, look, if you guys don't do this first and quickly, someone else is going to come do this, because this is definitely happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other folks out there that are doing some similar things as well. So I think clearly the world is calling for this, and great reaction from teachers. And the nice thing is from teachers and non-teachers alike. And to me, I wanted to make something that was applicable to learning, not necessarily institutionalized education, and not necessarily to just informal education, but just to the actual process of learning and sort of generalizing as much as possible.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. As you said, it's for both educators and non-educators alike, and the response was pretty amazing so far in such a short time. So, don't know. Do you focus on somebody who is learner's audience, and what would you say? Why are people so enthusiastic about it? Why do they like it so much?
Sure. So, you know, we just closed the round of financing led by Discovery Communications.
Yeah.
The reason, you know, strategic investments like that in the startup world are usually to be avoided, quite frankly. unless there's a very high level of overlap in vision and mission. And Discovery, which is, you know, like a multi-billion dollar company, global reach. I think they touched some 1 billion people on the planet. They're all about curious people, people who are curious and curiosity. And I think that's why there was such a strong overlap with what we're doing, because that's what Learnist is about. We're all, as humans, curious. We're all artists, as it were, like artists or scientists. We're learning machines. We're learning organisms. We're sort of our hardware is built. Software is built that way, and so that's who Learnist is for, and that's who Discovery is for. And you know, there are billions of people on the planet who are curious and want to learn and want to share what they know. And you know, there needs to be the easiest way possible to do it, to get as many people doing this possible. And quite frankly, you know, we see something around, you know, 10% or a little bit more of our users are creating content.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, isn't like Instagram, but it's, you know, 1,000x what Wikipedia is,
mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, it's about making it super easy. And not that Wikipedia should change at all. It's just that, you know, our model is, you know, probably the most added type of learning on Learnist are Wikipedia articles. So Wikipedia doesn't need to really change. I don't think. It's just that, you know, we're not trying to copy them. We're trying to get something that's a little bit more popular in terms of a content creation platform.
Can you share, I mean, it's early on, but can you share a little bit of the vision how Learnist might actually be embedded or add on the experience of Discovery, don't know, documentaries, for instance?
Yeah, so, you know, we're deep in conversations with Discovery around how to, you know, partner together beyond the investment, of course. So that can mean distribution for Learnist, you know, through their different media properties. They have a dozen or so media properties. And then obviously some more interesting sort of product partnerships where you could, for example, you know, sort of be watching something on Discovery
mm-hmm.
and find sort of the web version or the continuation of it, or learn more. Like, imagine you're watching
a little bit like what we see with the second screen, like when you watch a game, you want the statistics.
The second screen, the tablet that you have on your lap on the couch while you're watching, could sort of help amplify your experience. You know, for folks like Discovery, you know, it's not likely that there will be too many Learnist users that are not also Discovery users, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're touching a billion or so people
yep.
on the planet. It's going to take me a while to get past that, right? So I think, you know, folks like them, their perspective is they want more to share of day.
Mm-hmm.
They want more of your eyeball time. And, you know, they'd rather you sort of continue to engage with their content when you're, you know, standing in a line at the grocery store. And, you know, you had watched the Discovery show earlier, so maybe you're still thinking about it, and you're sort of playing with those web assets
mm-hmm.
now. So I think that's why this makes sense for them. You know, it's an opportunity to increase their share of day of people's lives.
Definitely. For you, on the other hand, if we look at the quality and also interesting things around, like next-gen televisions, for you, If we think learn is becoming like in the center of people's homes and not only when they wanna be educated or learn about something, is of course a very fascinating opportunity as well.
Absolutely. We see a world where, and you're watching the news and they give their little Twitter handle down at the bottom, but they would also give their Learnist handle. Mm-hmm. So, whatever news topic they were talking about, you could continue learning more about it on their Learnist board or on their Learnist profile.
In a previous answer, you... not surprisingly, told us that you get pitches from other founders every day, and I mentioned in the intro that you're also very involved in Startup Weekend EDU. Why was it fascinating for you to help other people? Is it really interesting for you bringing more teachers into founding startups or being a co-founder at least? Or do you see that education, online education, let's say, as simply should get more attention than it already maybe has had last year and probably this year?
I try not to do anything that doesn't have multiple reasons to do it. Just because I kill as many birds with each stone as possible. So in the case of Startup Weekend, EDU, there was really no different. A lot of reasons to do it. Some of them are I feel like to the extent that the what's happening in this space affects everybody in this space.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're a lot more there now, but Startup Weekend EDU is almost 2 years old now, I think. In the year before that, so 3 years ago, I still felt like it was a lot of talk in the space around the revolution and the ed tech reform and the changes and startups and ed tech startups and ed tech entrepreneurs. We wanted to I didn't want to languish in this area of talk, and not like we, by any stretch of the imagination take credit for making it more about action. We just want
about
to participate.
Doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We want to participate in that sort of movement from talk to action, and I feel we effectively did that. And then also, there were so many people coming up in the space, and a lot of them, I think, coming necessarily from a startup or an entrepreneur or technology background, that I didn't want them to trip up because of that. So we wanted to kind of give them access and a onboarding experience into the world of ed tech entrepreneurship. And I think it helps the whole space, which helps us as well.
So what is then better, entrepreneurs starting something in education, starting a business in education, or giving a teacher, or let's say more broadly, educator some money and tell him or support him in building a startup?
Yes, I think the best situation is either if in that one individual there's not a great entrepreneur slash business person and a great educator slash learning expert, you get two of them and you partner, and you can't do these things on your own. You need a team around you that is as good as you, that is as bought in as you, and then you can do it. And in fact, I think this is one of the problems in this space a little bit right now, is that there's been such an effort to sort of turn the teacher into an entrepreneur.
Uh-huh.
I think the effort should have been put into getting these teacher entrepreneurs partnered with business entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And not because they're incapable of any aspect of it, but because there's too much work to do, and that educator entrepreneur should probably be focused on the sort of product and learning aspect of the organization, and the partner should be focused on the business aspect of it, and the whole organization is more likely to succeed, I think, in this way. And the sort of founder's dating style, I'd like to see a lot more of that.
Okay, then last question, actually. What do you think are the exciting things for 2013? can, of course, refer a little bit to Learnest if you want, or to the education ecosystem in general.
Yeah, so I think if you look globally, you know, outside of the United States, outside of the world of K-12, and we really like learning at a global level, not like I'm coming up with this, but I think it's the smartphone is still probably the most important thing happening. The sort of hundreds of millions of smartphones that will come online this year means hundreds of millions more learners with learning at the tip of their finger, literally. And so to the extent that there are applications and tools that sort of are ready waiting for those people, I think they're going to be voraciously consumed. And I think, quite frankly, this will be a much bigger year in the world of educational technology and learning technology than last year. And I think there's still a lot of upside. I don't think we're anywhere close to finished.
And, well, when we look at your activities, and of course from our like listeners and viewers, you're really a persona in education, so all over the place. But where would you say, well, we should definitely recommend people check out Learnest if they want Grokket as well. About you, what's the best way, Twitter probably to follow your...
It's probably the best way to do it. Or follow me on Learnest, and you can learn about all the things I like teaching about.
Excellent. So, Fab, thank you so much for taking the time. It was really fun learning about Learnest and all the exciting things you are up to.
I lament not having been in France to do the interview in person.
Maybe, but you went last year, so maybe Startup Weekend EDU London, but okay, sounds good. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye.